Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 264. Greta, what is happening?
What is happening? I don't know. What's happening?
I was hoping you would tell me.
Well, the sad news is that baseball's over for the year.
True.
So that's kind of a bummer. The good news is the Braves won the series, so that's cool.
Right.
That's what's happening. Braves are world champs.
Just lost all our Houston subs.
Oh, shoot. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Share the love.
Speaking of sharing the love, on this episode, we're looking at some surprising, perhaps even shocking, bits of new info from the nature of Middle-earth.
Shocking, you say?
Shocking.
Shocking.
This is my completely, utterly shocked face right here. No, this is cool stuff. There's some actual, like, really interesting stuff that I wanted to share with you guys that have been finding in the nature of Middle-earth.
Cool.
Very, very large book, lots of things, so there's probably much more shocking that's not covered in this episode, but maybe we'll do a part two. Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. Ready?
Ready.
3, 2, 1. Whoops. Move that hand over so they can see it right there. All right, there we go.
Cool. All right.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Andrew T., John R., Ms. Anonymous, Red Hawk, and returning as an executive producer. She has been a patron for a long time. She has been an executive producer before, and she is an executive producer again. That is Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
Caitlin,
you're amazing.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Caitlin, in fact, made an annual pledge. So, you know, just awesome. Keeping it as real as possible.
Yep.
So
thank you
so much, Caitlin.
And thank you to all of our executive producers.
Absolutely.
I mean, couldn't do it without you guys.
Absolutely. We also want to recognize another patron who has been a monthly patron before, but has just annualized their pledge recently, and that is Dure Nair.
Nice.
So thank you so much for becoming an annual patron.
Thank you.
As you guys would know from listening to our last episode, we've got kind of a big promotion going on from now until the end of the year. You can get 2 months free, and depending on what level you pledge at, you're going to get a copy of one of my books or both of my books, right? So I think it was, I believe, let me make sure I got this right here before I give some bad info. So if you pledge at the $10 per month or above level, you'll get both books, right? So you got to make an annual pledge, $10 per month or above. You get both books and you get 2 months free right now until the end of the year. And that's in addition to the stuff you already get when you sign up. If you pledge at the $5 per level month annualized, then you get a signed copy of one of my books of your choice. So, pretty sweet deal. And
really good deal.
And everybody who annualizes right now gets a 2 months free. So,
can't beat free, people.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. All right. So, get on over there, patreon.com/Tolkien Road, and support us as we go into 2022. Going to be going back to the Silmarillion, going to be having a lot of fun, going to be going deep and preparing the world for Latron Prime and for whatever craziness that might bring. So, you know, it's going to bring a lot of crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully
it's going to be good.
Hopefully mostly good crazy.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Right.
Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. If you are a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes or your preferred source for the show and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps get the word out about the Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to mention our most recent 5-star review.
Nice.
This is on Apple Podcasts. Subject, fantastic, from Scolders. 5 stars. If I could, I would give more than 5 stars. I'm learning so much from John and Greta about Tolkien. I've also almost finished The Silmarillion after trying 2 previous times. I highly recommend this podcast to anyone who is a fan of Tolkien. I also find them immensely hilarious at times.
Ah, sweet.
Yeah, that's I think I've mentioned this before, but sometimes I'll go back and listen to older episodes, just like, not because I go back and, like, you know, I'm not that much of a narcissist, but like I have reason to go back and listen for like trying to find a reference, and I'll just like kind of leave it on, and then I'll just find myself laughing at something we had said. So I guess we are kind of funny.
I guess we are.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
That's
good.
That's funny because we don't really set out to be. We're not like a comedy podcast or anything like that.
No.
But yeah.
No. But maybe that's just it. We just don't try too hard.
I'm glad to hear it's not just me who thinks yes. we're funny, that other people actually do
think
that.
I know, because isn't that kind of how it usually goes? Like, you think right. you're funny even if other people don't.
Yeah.
So it's nice when those opinions align.
Yeah.
Like, you think you're funny, and then other people think you're funny, too.
That's right. That's yeah. right. Sometimes it's just spontaneous, the interaction of two people having a good time, too. So
yeah.
It just
yeah.
happens.
Yeah.
Scolders, thank you. The funny yes, thing about this one you. Was I loved that comment, so I posted it on our Twitter feed, and then she responded, and she follows us on Twitter, and she responded, and she was like, haha, that's my tweet. And I was
that's
like,
awesome.
Boom.
I love it. I love it. That's
that is,
cool.
That is awesome.
Good stuff.
So go follow us on Twitter. We're doing more on Twitter. We're almost to 5. I'm finally trying. I feel like I'm finally getting some headway on being deliberate and constant about Twitter. So go follow us over there. We're almost to 500 followers on Twitter. I want to go from 500 to 1,000 very quickly, but let's get to 500 first. So right now, if you're listening to this, head on over to Twitter. Follow us. Boom. Yep. Got some good stuff over there already. All right. So YouTube, it's time for the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5 for all of those watching us on YouTube. You too can be a... so let's do it first, and then I'll say the rest. 3, 2, 1. Whoops. Nice. That was a good one.
That was a good one.
You too can be a part of the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5. Just head on over to YouTube where this episode is posted and give us your best whoops in the comments below.
You can spell it however you want.
You can. I prefer the HWHAPISH.
It's fine. You're completely entitled to your opinion, but I'm just letting everybody know they can spell it however they want.
Mm-hmm. As long as you spell it that way.
No.
Yeah.
However you want.
Okay. Not going to argue with you about this.
Mm-mm. It's not worth it.
1,000 subs. We're almost to 1,000 subs on YouTube. So
okay, what's a sub?
Subscribers, right? So that's a big milestone for us. Head on over there. We are closing in on 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. We need you guys to go over there and subscribe if you aren't already. It will literally take you like 1 minute to do that, right? Especially if you already have a Gmail account or a YouTube account or something like that, right? All you got to do is go over to YouTube and find us, Tolkien Road Podcast. So search for it, and then we're right there, and subscribe to our channel, right? Mm-hmm. Get us to 1,000. Let's get there by the time, we record the next episode.
It's really easy to do. I did it recently.
Yeah.
And it took me like 10 seconds.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about surprising, shocking secrets from the nature of Middle Earth.
Awesome. Let's do it.
This is going to be like, what is it? The National Enquirer? Of Tolkien. So,
but a little cleaner.
Yeah, well, not really like that, but really interesting stuff. All right, so you need to pick up a copy if you haven't already. First of all, we've had Carl on the show a couple of times, the editor. Mm-hmm. And what I love about this book is there's just a lot of like it's just a Tolkien nerd's dream in a way, right? Like it goes into so many different issues that Tolkien wrote about later in his life as he was trying to like piece it all together. And and some of them are like maybe some of these things actually like very much surprised me. The first one we're going to talk about is Gandalf's appearance. So you may have already seen the video I did on this on our YouTube channel, which if you haven't, go over there and watch it. If you have, go over there and watch it again and share it with people. But the basic interesting thing here is that
I'm terrible.
Man, we'll scrap this episode.
Sorry.
Just blew out people's eardrums.
I was so careful not drinking to the microphone.
It's all good. All right. So the interesting thing here is that the image that most of us have of Gandalf these days is Ian McKellen from the Peter Jackson films. It's Peter mm-hmm. Jackson's depiction of Gandalf, right? There's a lot of good things about that depiction, and I'm a fan of it. Ian McKellen does a great job. I think they did the aesthetic of it and of the films in general is very solid, very good. But it's interesting that Tolkien actually takes issue with a couple of the things, and he's not talking. So let me make this clear. He's obviously not referencing Peter Jackson's films because they had not been made yet when he was alive. In fact, they were still several decades away from being made. But what he's responding to is the illustrations by an artist named Pauline Baynes. She had illustrated a version or provided illustrations for a I believe it was a calendar. It may have actually been like an like a version of it, a version of The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings that came out. But anyway, we have some different illustrations, and I found those, and you can see what those look like in the video that I made about this as well. But I'm just going to cut through the chase here. If I asked you, Greta,
mm-hmm.
and you probably know the answer now, but if I asked you a month ago what color mm-hmm. was Gandalf's hat, what would you say?
I would say gray.
Yeah, right? It's Gandalf the gray.
He's Gandalf the gray, yeah.
His hat's gray. It looks gray. You remember it as being mm-hmm. gray. In all the pictures you normally see, it looks gray,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Gandalf's hat, according to Tolkien, was blue. It was unequivocally blue.
Not all bluish right? gray?
Nope, unequivocally blue. Here's
Does
what
he
says.
Actually use the word unequivocally?
He doesn't, but I'm saying he doesn't equivocate on it, right? He doesn't like qualify it.
He just says blue.
Here we go, page 192. Gandalf's hat was wide-brimmed with a pointed conical crown, and it was blue, italicized here, right? Mm-hmm. Which I'm not sure of the editorial practice. I'm not sure if that's Tolkien's emphasis or if that's added emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
But it says it was blue, semicolon, right? So mm-hmm. end of statement, right? Then moving on, this is interesting. So yeah, blue hat. Gandalf's hat was blue. But he did wear a long gray cloak, right? So his cloak was gray. So he had a blue hat and a gray cloak. Mismatched hat and
cloak. I was going to say, just like a man to mismatch his hat and his cloak.
Yeah. So.
Am I right?
That one will blow your mind to start. All right. So next thing up. His cloak. How long would you say his cloak was?
Me?
Yeah.
Long.
Yeah. Like how long? Like how far down does it go?
Like to his feet.
Right.
Like ground.
And that's what I would have said too. Right.
Yeah. Well, it just seems appropriate for a wizard.
According to Tolkien, he wore a long gray cloak, but this would not reach much below his knees, right?
Not much below. So just a little below the knees.
Right. Yeah.
That seems weird.
Well, and
shocking.
And we actually have evidence for how Tolkien saw this, that he actually saw this when he wrote The Hobbit, because he has illustrations that show this of Gandalf that show this, right?
Mm.
And you can see those in the video that I made as well. You can also see it. I have a Twitter thread on this. If you go over to our Twitter account, it shouldn't be too far down the thread right now, or down the feed right now. But you can see some of these images in that Twitter thread as well. So blue hat, silver gray cloak, or a long gray cloak that did not reach much below his knees. And then the third thing, the third big thing of all this, he had no hair on his upper lip. So Gandalf was a no stash, right? He had the beard, but no stash. Yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah. So it's just a little, you know, these things add up to kind of a not huge, but like significant tweak, right? I think the no hair on the upper lip thing is particularly significant. One thing that's really interesting that he says, and I really liked this, this made me think about what he meant. It says, and so he's describing this painting, the Der Bärgeist, which is where the inspiration for Gandalf came from. He says, on a rock under a pine tree is seated a small but broad old man with a wide-brimmed round hat and a long cloak, talking to a white fawn that is nuzzling his upturned hands. He has a humorous but also compassionate expression. His mouth is visible and smiling because he has a white beard but no hair on his upper lip. The scene is a woodland glade beside a rivulet and a glimpse of Rocky Mountain towers in the distance. An owl and four other smaller birds are looking on from the branches of the trees. The Bärgeist has a green hat and a scarlet cloak, blue stockings, and light shoes. I altered the colors of hat and cloak to suit Gandalf, a wanderer in the wild, but I have no doubt that when at ease in a house, he wore light blue stockings and shoes. He was the friend and confidant of all living creatures of goodwill. He differed from Radagast and Saruman in that he never turned aside from his appointed mission and was unsparing of himself. Radagast was fond of beasts and birds and found them easier to deal with. He did not become proud and domineering, but neglectful and easygoing, and he had very little to do with elves or men, although obviously resistance to Sauron had to be sought chiefly in their cooperation. But since he remained of goodwill, though he had not much courage, his work in fact helped Gandalf at crucial moments. Though it is clear that Gandalf had in fact more knowledge of birds and beasts than Radagast and was regarded by them with more respect and affection. So just a little bit of info about, you know, Gandalf, and it was also interesting that bit about Radagast. One other thing, and this is actually what I was looking for. His looks and his manners has had touches of the comic or grotesque, especially to Hobbit eyes, reflecting the sense of humor of a fundamentally humble spirit. Hmm. It was really, really interesting to me to hear about like the grotesque, because when I think of grotesque, I think of like horror movies and like, mm-hmm. like scary stuff. Mm-hmm. But then I realized like grotesque is more like in the context in which Tolkien was using it, was more like weirdly humorous, right? Like, hmm. you know, I think that maybe has more to do with how it used to be used.
Mm-hmm. Didn't have such a negative or scary.
Yeah, it was like not necessarily like a, you know, classically beautiful face or appearance, but mm-hmm. like, but something that was like strange and like almost mm-hmm. arresting, but could be warm, like could be mm-hmm. something that's like, you know, like endearing.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So yeah. When I think of that, it makes me think of like, you know, kind of a big nose, no mustache, which would be weird, and then like kind of maybe larger, like kind of larger eyes in a way, you know, mm-hmm. like kind of larger, captivating eyes. So not like handsome in like a classical sense, but arresting, and mm-hmm. and it would be like in a face that you could kind of like feel like warmth towards, you know, like that you feel like has your best interest mm-hmm. in mind, you know, and like mm-hmm. in the compassionate sense. So anyway, I just like mm-hmm. this picture of Gandalf, and I thought those details about blue hat and no hair on his upper lip were interesting, but also just like this kind of general idea of him having a grotesque face, as Tolkien puts it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Especially considering he was a Maiar, like you would assume that he would just be very attractive in every classical sense of the word, but it makes sense too that he would have like this wise kind of like aged look about him too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and remember, the Maiar were not necessarily the Maiar were spirits, right? They were
took on human form.
When they put on when they put on any other form.
Not
necessarily
true.
Human form. We're going to learn something about that here in just a second. It's really interesting. But they would put on form like we kind of put on clothes. Now it was a little more permanent than that, mm. but it wasn't part of their nature, right, to have bodies like we do, right? So gotcha. When they put something on, it could be for a specific, it was for a specific purpose, right? It was to project something about who they were, right? Mm. So it could be that was what he was ordered to do, or like, you know, that was what he was encouraged to do, was have that kind of appearance,
yeah,
for the sake of endearing himself to the people he needed to endear himself to. So anyway, interesting facts about Gandalf there, yeah, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Next are, this is a bit from about the heights of various figures in Middle Earth. Hmm. Really interesting stuff here again. All right. So, first off, you know, most of us probably assume that the Eldar were not short. Mm-hmm. But according to Tolkien, the Eldar, meaning, and what he means by that, those who accepted the invitation from the Valar to remove to Middle Earth, so who made the journey, right? Those of the Quindi, of all of the elves. The Eldar were generally over 6'6", right? So very tall. And even their women were over 6 feet tall, right? So the Eldar, in and of themselves, were pretty tall people. He goes on to say that the Numenoreans, especially those of like the royal house and like closely related to the royal house, were over 7 feet tall. Wow. Yeah. So like the Numenoreans were like legit giants, right? If you've ever like, you know, I'm 5'10". When I've got, you know, so I'm not a short person, but when I've walked up to somebody who's like close to 7 feet, you know, you feel small real quick, right?
You think you feel small.
I know, yeah. She's not quite as tall as I am.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So.
Not at all. So, yeah, I would feel like a very, very short person next to a Numenorean.
Yes, well, and we can kind of understand the sense of why they were such an imposing military force, right? Just the mere presence of seeing, mm-hmm. like, an army of 7 foot tall mm-hmm. men is scary. Right, it would be scary to behold, especially in like that ancient world sort of context where you're going toe to toe with them, right? So,
I wonder if they'll be that tall in the show.
Well, that's what I'm. That's why I'm laying this out there. Is I'm like, are they actually going to make them 7 feet tall in the show? Again, it's like, you know, I'm like, Carl wrote the book. That's like, I think we mentioned this in the last episode, right? Like, Carl's like, you know, every, you know, he's got all this stuff in there, and they have to go back and be like, hey, Jeff, can we borrow $5 million more dollars to make some updates to?
We
got to
get some stilts, and
like Carl's got little Carl wrote the book of the $5 million footnotes, right? Like, it's like, you know, that's like, oh, I wish we'd known that a year ago, right? Yeah. We would have made the, we would have cast the Numenoreans different.
Yeah.
But yeah, 7 feet tall, 7 feet tall, and he mentions Elendil specifically as being 7 feet tall.
Wow.
All right, so he gets into talking about the fellowship. Aragorn was at least 6 foot six, according to Tolkien. Now, you would have think he would being pretty as close to the thing as close as possible to a Numenorean in his time, to a pure like pure blooded Numenorean, that he would be closer to 7 feet. But Tolkien specifically says he was just at least 6 foot six. So, and that of course. The Numenorean thing, of course, has to do with the fact that they are partly descended from the Eldar, right? Mm-hmm. That they are, you know, they are, they have an Eldar strain in their blood, right?
Right.
So Aragorn, at least 6 foot six, and he is the tallest of the Fellowship. Boromir, who is, you know, very close, you know, very closely Numenorean of Numenorean lineage, was at least 6 foot four, according to Tolkien. And these are Tolkien's numbers. Gandalf, he says, was at least 5 foot six, right? Stooped over, but not necessarily as tall. Yeah. Not necessarily as tall as Aragorn and Boromir. Mm,
interesting.
Legolas would have been at least 6 feet. And then Gimli was taller than the hobbits, at least 4 feet. He says dwarves were, you know, generally at least 4 feet tall. And the hobbits were like between 3 foot four and 3 foot six. And he considers Sam was probably the shortest of them.
Really?
Yeah. So, but, and that's, you know, he talks about like, that's kind of where the term halfling came from is when they were first seen, you know, in the context of like the Numenoreans, like 3 foot five is half of 7 feet. Right. So.
How interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. So just some perspective, Aragorn should be, you know, pretty much at least a head above everybody else and way more above everybody else beyond that.
Yeah. So he would be towering over the hobbits, right? Yeah.
Okay, the next thing that I found really fascinating, and it's actually from this same section in the description of characters. Hobbits are humans. I did not, like, I don't think that's ever been spelled out anywhere, right? That, like, what of what race the hobbits are, right?
What else have they been?
I don't know. It was never clear to me, right? They were kind of this mysterious thing, like, you know, mysterious group of people that just kind of appeared out of nowhere. And to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, people, to my knowledge, it's nowhere else stated in like in that way. But here's what Tolkien says. He's actually talking about Gollum. He says, Gollum was, according to Gandalf, one of a riverside hobbit people and therefore in origin a member of a small variety of the human race, although he had become deformed during his long inhabiting of the Dark Lake. So, Gollum was, he makes clear that he was a riverside hobbit and therefore an origin, a member of a small variety of the human race, right? So, and then he goes on to say a little later, let's see, he remained a human being, not an animal or a mere bogey, even if deformed in mind and body, an object of disgust, but also of pity to the deep-sided, such as Frodo had become. Maybe this isn't as mind-blowing for everybody else, but there we have, you know, clear statement of what hobbits are, right? They are just a men that have descended from some other line and have, you know, developed in such a way that they are half the size of normal men, right? Roughly half the size of normal men. So, maybe you just assume that, but I don't know anywhere where it's actually stated that that's where hobbits came from.
No, that's right? Fair. I guess I had just assumed that because I don't know what else they would be. I mean, what about dwarves? Are they humans too?
No, dwarves aren't humans. Dwarves are made by Aule, right?
Oh, that's right. Dwarves are made by Aule.
So we have and the elves. We have humans. We have elves. We have men, humans, and then we have the dwarves. And then other races of creatures. But the thing about hobbits is they just seem to kind of come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And they seem mm-hmm. to live longer than most men, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're obviously way smaller. They have large feet. They have like, I believe this is canonical in terms of Tolkien's writings, that they do have kind of like more elvish style ears. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But they just seem to have their own unique characteristics, almost like a hybrid of all three races in a way, right? Like they're not they're not immortal, but they live a lot longer than men, and they're smaller like dwarves, right? So it almost feels like they're kind of a hybrid of all three.
Yeah.
But right here we see that they are in fact human beings, right? Twice said.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's very.
But which also means that Gollum is a human being, which a lot of people probably don't realize, right? Probably a lot of people don't put two and two together.
Well,
on
he
that.
Sure doesn't look like one in the movies.
Well,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
But he also doesn't really look like he could be descended from hobbits either. So.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that was actually more shocking and interesting than it initially sounded.
Well,
so good job.
Darn Garshnard, I hope so.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I haven't used that term in a while. I like it.
I do too. All right. Yeah. Page 308.
Eagles. All right.
Get ready for this, y'all.
Eagles.
Eagles. Eagles are Maiar. Right?
What?
Eagles are Maiar. Here we go. That none of the Valar or Maiar should appear in their lands to aid them was also inevitable, but it is not said that Manwë abandoned them, peoples over whom he had been appointed by Eru to be a vice-regent. He's referring to like the people in Beleriand and then in Middle-earth in the Third Age, right? His messengers could come from Valinor and did so, and though in disguised form and in issuing no commands, they intervened in certain desperate events. And then he's got a footnote here. The most notable were those Maiar who took the form of the mighty speaking eagles that we hear of in the legends of the War of the Noldor against Melkor, and who remained in the west of Middle-earth until the fall of Sauron and the Dominion of Men, after which they are not heard of again. So there you go.
That's just in a footnote?
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, these little like $5 million footnotes, right?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, you know, mm-hmm. now that we know that, you're like, well, duh, of course. Like, they had to be. Because, I mean, they clearly weren't just ordinary eagles.
Right.
Right? I mean, they were pretty dang special eagles. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
That they would be Maiar. But that's still so cool.
Well, and then you're not even going to believe what he says Tom Bombadil is. I mean, you know, over here. I'm just kidding. No, he didn't say that. It's like,
I was going to say.
What do you know Tom Bombadil is?
Oh, you know? Man. Is Tom mentioned in that book at all?
Not that I know of. Let me look in the index real quick.
Gosh, I kind of feel like that, you know, that is kind of up there with like, you know, the greatest mysteries of all time.
Tom like, Bombadil.
Tom Bombadil.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if we could figure that one out, like, gosh, I could sleep at night.
Yeah. Then the universe might just implode.
It
on
might
itself.
Implode. So yeah. It's probably good that we haven't figured it out.
Right.
And that Carl hasn't figured it out either.
So, that one's great. Like, eagles are Maiar. There you go. Or at least the great eagles are Maiar. Right?
So good. So, like, the ones that rescue the fellowship from the, they rescued the fellowship.
Yeah.
Like, yes, okay.
Right, and they intervene at various other times
They do,
as well.
Too. Yes, yeah. I remember, yeah.
So.
That's good. That's really good.
All right, we're going to end with some shocking bits about beards.
I thought we were talking about dancing bears.
All right, Greta, here we go. Aragorn. Mm-hmm. Bearded or beardless?
I'm going to say beardless.
Beardless it is.
Nice.
Aragorn, no beard. Of course, we all think of Viggo Mortensen when we think of Aragorn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the scruff, mm-hmm. right? With the, mm-hmm. You know, the like the romance novel scruff.
I was
going
to say the bad boy ranger guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Beardless. Yeah. So beardless, not just by shaving, but by nature, by DNA, right?
So he wasn't even able to grow a beard if he wanted to.
Yeah. It says, a note was sent to Patricia Finney in December of 72, answering a question about beards that mentioned some of the male characters which she and a friend did not imagine as having beards. I replied that I myself imagined Aragorn, Denethor, Imrahil, Boromir, Faramir as beardless. This, I said, I suppose not to be due to any custom of shaving, but a racial characteristic. And it's due to
that's
their
what Tolkien said?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's due to their descent from, again, from having Eldar blood, right? Mm-hmm. So they have Eldar mm-hmm. blood because of their Numenorean descent, right? And the Eldar did not have beards.
That was kind of where my brain went.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, they're descended from elves. Elves don't have beards, so it would make sense that they wouldn't have beards.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So all of those guys, Aragorn, Boromir, Faramir, of course, Denethor in the films does not, but Boromir, mm-hmm. Faramir, and Aragorn all have beards, right? So in the films, but according to Tolkien, no beards, not canonical for them to have beards. And the, you know, the important thing here is like kind of the logic of it, right? It's the, because they are descended from the, they have that Elvish strain in their blood. So there's, you know, there's no, they can't grow beards because of that, right? That's not mm-hmm. part of their DNA. Little footnote, I'm going to read this. When I came to think of it in my own imagination, beards were not found among hobbits as stated in text, nor among the Eldar, nor stated. All male dwarves had them. The wizards had them, though Radagast, not stated, had only short, curling, light brown hair on his chin. Men normally had them with full grown, when full grown, hence Éomer, Théoden, and all others named, but not Denethor, Boromir, Faramir, Aragorn, Isildur, or other Numenorean chieftains. So the men had them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it says all male dwarves. And this is an important point because someone on our last episode about the nature of Middle Earth was like, on YouTube, was like, what about beards for dwarf women, right? Are they there, right? So.
Not far-fetched.
He doesn't say explicitly that women, dwarf women do not have beards, but he says all male dwarves had them, is what he says.
Hmm. Right? So there's still a possibility that female dwarves had them.
Yes, but in the way he stated it would seem to imply that it would seem unlikely, right? Like, if you know,
yeah.
If you're going to say all male dwarves had them, then why not go ahead and say, like, all, as along with all female dwarves, if that was the case, right?
Hmm.
So, and it just, I don't know.
Hmm.
It would surprise me to find out Tolkien like decided that he wanted dwarf women to have beards. It just seems like it would be kind of a weird, like a weird uncharacteristic note from him.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
So, but yeah. I don't know. We don't have it explicit from him, but that's what Tolkien says right here. All male dwarves had them, and that's it. So
that makes sense. Good.
So, yeah.
Mind blown.
Shocking.
Mind. Shockingly blown. Yeah.
This is some good. Good nerd, good Tolkien nerd stuff right
Absolutely.
There for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, there's a lot of stuff in there about Numenor, by the way, and I wanted, you know,
in the book, and
I wanted to get to some of that, but we're gonna have to probably do that at another time, so we'll save that for a future episode.
Sounds good.
Before we jump into our correspondence, I wanted to remind you guys, as we did at the beginning of the episode, hey, head on over, please do. We need your guys' support going into 2022. We want to make 2022 our best year ever for the Fellowship of the Road. We got this great deal with 2 months free. And when you guys invest in us, when you pledge with us, we're going to make it worth your while and we're going to have a lot of fun. We're gonna have the most fun we've had on this podcast, in 2022, like ever, right? It's going to go from, you know, what it has been. You guys listen, you guys love it, and it's going to be even better, right? We're going to be doing some live streams. We're going to start doing that some. And, you know, at the end of the day, we really need your guys' support to do that in the best way possible. So we just hope you'll head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road, sign up, support us, get 2 months free, and get some free signed copies of my books as well. So
all good stuff.
Right on.
Yeah.
And hey, outside the U.S., we highly encourage you all to, you know, to participate as well. We have many patrons from outside the U.S., many listeners from outside the U.S. We always love... I always love going onto our little analytics map and seeing all the different countries where people are listening to us from. We had one from Zambia yesterday, like in Central Africa, like South Central Africa.
That was
pretty cool to see. Just people from all kinds of places that to us in the U.S. seem very exotic, right? Mm-hmm. Places that we've heard of, but we never would have thought of like knowing somebody from there or of like traveling there for, you know, for any reason. But now we're like, well, I don't know. Maybe if we can get a million listeners in Zambia, then maybe we'll go to Zambia and, you know, do an event there. So anyway, but my point is outside the U.S., you guys can participate in this as well. The only thing is, please do contact me beforehand so we can talk about shipping for your free copies. Because it does cost a little bit more, to ship to you guys overseas, depending on what country you live in. So,
yeah. So investment in Tolkien Road is an investment in fun.
Right on.
Yeah.
And in furthering the cause of Tolkien knowledge, right? And of bringing the best of Tolkien to the world, right? And making sure the world knows who Tolkien was, what he was all about, keeping true to his spirit, his tone, all the things that mattered to him.
All the things.
Yeah.
Yep. With a nice heavy dose of fun in there, too.
Right on.
All right.
Let's talk about some correspondence.
Oh, I love correspondence.
All right.
Let's do it.
September 21st. This is from Van Der Vecken. This is in response to episode 66, The Bridge of Khazad-dûm, the chapter from Lord of the Rings. Going back a good ways here. Guys, the strain Tolkien is referring to is the physical strain on the door, which shatters a moment later, not strain on Gandalf. That proved too great a strain. The door burst into pieces. The strain is on the door. So I think if I remember this one, we were like, man, Gandalf must have been under a lot of strain, and he just had to stop with trying to open the door. and he's like, guys, the strain was on the door. Hey, you know what? We do that kind of stuff sometimes. Sometimes you just like you're reading and you're trying to prep and everything, and you miss the forest for the trees, right? Your brain gets fixated on thinking one thing and it's actually something else. So I think that's what that was all about. Van Der Vecken.
I don't even remember this conversation, but I believe that it was several
years ago. I do too. I'm like, totally sounds like some goofy conversation we would have been having. Or just like, we are like totally like, what is he talking about? And like everybody else is like, oh my gosh.
You're like, guys, come on,
guys.
Get it together.
It's the strain on the door.
Strain on the door. Dang it. Well, we appreciate you guys setting us straight.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Van Der Vecken. All right. Next up on, let's see, September 22nd is from Jennifer, longtime listener Jennifer. So Jennifer said, what happened to your theme music? If you're considering changing the theme music, may I suggest these? She sent a couple of suggestions, one from the Tolkien Ensemble and one, the Hobbit walking song, The Road Goes Ever On. I think I'd like to get back to that at some point, but with trying all this new video stuff, you know, over the last, it's just easier on the editing process to avoid the music. And so, I don't know, I kind of like just the cold open myself. I don't know, you guys tell us if you don't like it. If enough of you say, like, we want theme music again, then we can go back and do that. But it's, you know, it's just another step in my editing process. And, you know, so.
Basically, you're lazy. I thought you were going back and adding the theme music to the episodes. I didn't even realize that we didn't have theme music.
Just the cold open, baby.
I'm a little disappointed.
Oh, well.
I liked our theme music, too.
It's not that I didn't like it.
There's a lot more work.
You know,
for
it's another step in there, especially with the video editing, right? I like being able to just record the video and then boom, put it onto YouTube. So without having to go through the process of editing things in the video editor and stuff like that. So
gotcha.
I don't know though. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to hold it out there, and you know, like we're not going to do it unless you pay up. But it's like, honestly, everybody, like the more patronage we have, right, the more it frees us up to do like the cooler things, to do the extra touches, like those sorts of things. You know, at some point it's just like, I got to decide, okay, how much of the time that I can use for doing this Tolkien stuff is going to go to preparing for the episode, how much is going to go to editing and all those kinds of things. So, you know,
that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
So Jennifer, I'm a music person, so I love music and I miss music, but, you know, so maybe it'll come back at some point, but right now it's, and I thank you for the suggestions, but right now it's just not, it's high enough on the priority list for me to work into the editing process. All right. John R. on October 6th.
Do, do, do.
Yeah.
Do,
all
do,
right.
Do.
Hi, John and Greta. I am the John R. you might see on YouTube comments now and then. I've been a listener for a little while now and greatly enjoy what you do. I was not a haiku fan until I listened to how you use them on the podcast. An interesting concept where you can somewhat compress what happens in a chapter with a simple formatted poem. It's a fun mental exercise. Please keep reading and you'll find some. I was thinking we should get back to doing haiku with, you know, with the new year.
We should.
Yeah.
Since we'll be going through the Silmarillion.
Yeah, maybe wrap up each discussion with the haiku.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah, I like that idea.
I do too.
He goes on to say, I don't always get to like the YouTube podcast if I listen on my iPhone. A bit harder to do as the next episode might start while I'm busy doing something. I try to like and comment when I can. Again, I really enjoy what you're doing. I've read Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit about 50 times or so going back to 1982. It's rare that a written work is very fun to reread, and Tolkien really left us all some special gifts. He says, it sounds like you may get some negative comments now and then. You know what? That's just going to happen. It's sad to say, but not a surprise given today's social media climate. Some folks out there spend a lot of time just being negative and others to others from the safety of their keyboards and screens. I'd like to have a podcast myself on Tolkien, as I feel I have a lot to share. If I did, I expect that a part of the burden would be those negative comments. It would weigh me down too. Again, it's too bad, but please do continue to let it roll off of you like water off a duck's back. Thanks, John, for those kind words. I think we've been doing this long enough, and over the last couple of years, just been able to just kind of be like, whatever. Yeah. If somebody's got a negative, like, people are going to share their negative comments. Most of the feedback we get is very positive, right? And that's what I try to focus on. And honestly, like, the negative comments really don't bother me anymore. Like, you know, it's at some point you're just kind of like
haters.
The only thing that truly bothers me is when someone says something that I agree with, right? That I'm like, yeah, I could have said that better, or and then it's a little bit like, but I value that because that's actually constructive feedback,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that's just like, okay, I guess this podcast's not for you. That's great. Go find another one. Don't really know why you had to comment to say that to everybody, because there's a lot of other podcasts out there. But okay, you felt strongly enough. That's fine. It's a free country. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a free world. You have that right.
Mm-hmm.
I just focus on the positive stuff. You know, when I see a negative comment come through, I'll read it, glance at it, and if it's not saying something constructive, I won't ever read it again.
Moving on. That's right.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a quick note to tell you how much I enjoy what you guys are doing. Take care and all the best, John R. So,
thank you.
John, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm going to read some of his haikus. He wrote a few haikus.
Nice.
All right. And these are on the Fellowship. A thoughtful hobbit. Frodo comes from Hobbiton, a ring he carries.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Hail, Samwise Gamgee. Serves, cooks, cleans, carries, and fights. Faithful and loyal.
Mm.
I like that. That's I like how one. You list all the stuff mm-hmm. out in the middle. That's cool.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Young, inquisitive, read the maps in Rivendell, Mary Brandybuck. Nice.
Nice.
Immature young one, Pippin, Tom fool of a Took. Soon he will grow up.
Or will he?
He will. He will. Stolid and steadfast, dwarf of the fierce mountain race, Gimli, glowing sun.
Oh, nice.
Good old Gimli.
Yeah, Gimli.
Immortal Greenleaf, Legolas, Elf of the Woods, awesome with a bow. That he is.
Indeed, yes.
Tormented Warrior, Boromir, Gondor's Captain, the Ring tempted him.
Ooh, I like that one. Tormented Warrior.
I like that too. Really That's good. A really good way of describing mm-hmm. Boromir, I think.
Really, really good.
Tormented Warrior.
Yeah.
Good old Boromir, man.
Mm-hmm.
I got a place for Boromir in my heart. Don't we all? Like, shouldn't we all, right?
We all
like,
should.
we all could be that person, right? Let's mm-hmm. just like, got to use the ring, right? We have to grasp it because my men are dying, right?
Right? Yeah.
You know? Oh,
yeah.
Kind of makes me tear up just thinking about him, you know?
Yeah.
Ranger of the North, Tracker, Warrior, Great Man, Return of the King.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm.
And then last but certainly not least, gray cloaked with a staff. Long he fell in Khazad-dûm. He returned in white. Good old Gandalf.
Yes. Do you think his hat was still blue?
He didn't really. He didn't wear a hat afterward, did he? He
I don't you're right. He did. Didn't. He didn't.
Yeah.
You're right. He had the long, beautiful locks, but no hat.
That's right. Yeah. Well, at least in the films. I'm not sure how Gandalf, how Tolkien would describe him later on.
That's fair. It's fair.
John, thank you so much for those haiku and
for the great encouraging words.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It's great to hear from you, and please do keep in touch. Please continue to comment over on YouTube and mm-hmm. And keep in touch with us via personal correspondence as well.
Absolutely.
All right, next up is from Marilyn.
Marilyn.
All right. Marilyn sent an amazing note, as always.
As always.
Hello, Carswells. I'm a bit behind in responding, so this message will contain references to the two most recent episodes, the one on the second prophecy and the one on the rulers of Numenor. I would love to know if there had been any conversations between Christopher and his father about the second prophecy, which might have occurred after the year 1936. 1936 was when Tolkien first started to write about fathers and sons, an inherited ancient memory, and the land that was destroyed. It's not surprising when you consider how challenging a year 1936 turned out to be. The early origins of Akalabeth in this year point in a way to an answer to the question, what happens to humans, that remained unanswered in the text of the second prophecy as we have it. 1936 was also the end of the last remnants of the notion of the Great War as the war to end all wars. Soon, two of Tolkien's three sons would be pitched headfirst into the maelstrom of war. I can imagine that it seemed to him that all of the horror he had endured as a youth, all the deaths and destruction, wound up in the end being futile sacrifices. Perhaps at this time, Tolkien felt that the second prophecy was too optimistic. That's a good point. That would certainly be around the time that one would think that people would start to be having that change of mind about these things. Later in his life, Tolkien was caught up in the tension between the legendarium as fairy tale, which should not contain anything of real-world history, and Middle-earth is our world prior to our known history, and so not yet including the Incarnation. His humility gave him concern that he was writing theology without any sort of formal training. Taking myself too importantly, as he wrote in Letter 153 to Peter Hastings, if the end of Arda Mard is supposed to include the end of the world as we know it now, then maybe Tolkien feared to impinge on God's privite. I think I'm saying that right, but a medieval concept of God's secret knowledge. I believe that's Anglo-Saxon, or Middle English at least, as he wrote in Letter 181 to Michael Strait. More and more, as Tolkien's life drew to a close, he tried to find ways to bring Middle-earth into closer alignment with our own world, particularly in the realm of things such as cosmology, physics, and the like. He actually considered doing away with the two trees, noting that any accurate observations on the part of Elvish scientists would, of course, revealed that the sun and moon had always been there and that the earth was round. I, for one, am very grateful that Christopher did not dispense with the two trees, or with the elves waking up and walking for centuries in the starlight long before moon or sun were created. I am very glad of that, too, and I know that in the nature of Middle-earth there's a lot of discussion about the sun and the moon and, you know, when they arose and timetables, and he's working on that. Christopher had a ton, like, let this, you know, just, this needs to be like an epi- like a every episode refrain at this point, I think, but like, you know, thank you, Christopher, for all the work you did to like edit this and actually give us the Silmarillion, right? You gave us the Silmarillion, and then you were like, okay, then just so you understand, here's all of the complexity that I was working with, right? You know, just to give you this one work. So, yeah, I'm. It's hard for me to really argue with the way that the Silmarillion wound up, with the exception of like kind of the things that I've called out, which are more like, it would be great if there were just more maps included. It would be great if there was like kind of a frame narrative that provided that made it easier for people to get into it. But I don't really have much argument with the plot of any of it per se, right? But the second prophecy is just, it's a lot, there's a lot more to it. There's a lot cooler like to think about than, or the, at least the alternate version of the second prophecy that we discussed. Anyway, moving on. As for your good discussion today about the list of the rulers of Numenor, I found myself speculating about Tar Miriel. I wonder if she felt obligated to stay in power because it was her responsibility as the rightful heir of the royal line of Elros, even when it meant a forced marriage with her cousin. Because she was the daughter of Tar Palantir, she was also of the faithful, and by remaining a ruler, she could, perhaps, mitigate some of their hardships, share secret information with them that might help protect them, and do her best to soften her husband's policies against them. Alas, it seems that Tolkien, in the role of Eru, did not feel this was enough to spare her in the end. I find that scene where she is climbing to the top of Minil Tarma, but is nonetheless washed away by the rising water, to be one of the most heartbreaking of the many heartbreaking stories of Middle-earth. Yeah, you know, that's, man, that's a great point, Marilyn. And, like, what, we don't know much about Tar Miriel in the end, you know, so we don't, we don't know if maybe there was, you know, a mixture of, you know, bad reasons along with good ones. I mean, you lay out some possibilities for good reasons, but I think, you know, are probably true. But it's also true that sometimes, even, you know, even the good end up paying the price for the, you know, for the evil deeds of the wicked, right? You know, you know, that paying a price, right? That there is, collateral damage, right? You know, in all these things. And, you know, it's like, why doesn't, you know, in our own world, why doesn't, you know, it gets to that whole problem of evil. Why doesn't God spare, you know, spare those in those cases, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know, right? We don't know. And anyway, I don't want to get into a long theological discourse because this is your note, but it's a great point. It's a great point. And we've talked about such things on other episodes, and we'll talk about them again in the future, I'm sure, because Tolkien stories tend to come back to these kinds of discussions.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
As for why the eagles showed up at the Battle of Five Armies, Tolkien himself tells us in the text in the chapter The Return Journey. He writes, "The eagles had long had suspicion of the goblins mustering. From their watchfulness, the movements in the mountains could not be altogether hid. So they too had gathered in great numbers under the great eagle of the Misty Mountains, and at length, smelling battle from afar, they had to come speeding down the gale in the nick of time. So I'm afraid that Gandalf's inner cogitations at the edge of the battle had nothing to do with the eagle's appearance. They really were independent creatures, answerable to no one but the will of Eru, though willing to help out friends and allies when asked, even in the very early days of The Hobbit. Perhaps Gandalf was engaged in some Osanwe Kenta, communicating mind to mind with some of the elves on the field of battle, or possibly even trying to reach out to additional elvish armies to summon their aid. And while it is certainly an important point that the book was written by Bilbo as an account of his adventures, my experience is that any time we hear an authorial I voice in the text, it actually represents Tolkien himself breaking the fourth wall rather than Bilbo. Tolkien later said that he regretted all these asides from the author, i.e. himself, feeling that they were somewhat condescending towards his young readers. Great point. And again, you know, we just read right there that the eagles are in fact Maiar. So mm-hmm. that kind of adds to the level of independence that they, you know, that they did indeed have. But yeah, great point. I think it's astounding sometimes where we're like, you know, we think we see room in the text for certain interpretations. And then we find out later on that Tolkien explained that over here, or like, you know, there's this over here. Obviously The Hobbit is an earlier work. And so, you know, Tolkien wasn't as insistent upon, like stylistic cohesion. Is that the right term for, mm. for ensuring that like it read in a certain way. And we know that the tone of The Hobbit changes over the course of all of it. And you know, he had his regrets, and that's why he started on the path of trying to revise it later in life to be more in fitting with the tone of Lord of the Rings. But yeah. But anyway, at the end, The Hobbit may be a flawed work, but it's a flawed work that we love, and it's still a masterpiece. So,
word.
Marilyn, amazing note as always. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Let's see here. Our next one is from Bethany E. She wrote in response to our episode on A Fool's Hope. All right. She says, "Greetings, John and Greta. I really enjoyed your recent episode on The Fool's Hope. It's one of my favorite and one of the most intriguing scenes from both the book and the movie. I'm currently rereading Lord of the Rings with the Tea with Tolkien book club. Shout out to Caitlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to be reading the Council of Elrond chapter and found another connection to the Fool's Hope theme. When Gandalf is explaining about Saruman's treachery at the council, he tells how Radagast was also called a fool by Saruman. Radagast the bird tamer, Radagast the simple, Radagast the fool. Saruman used Radagast to entrap Gandalf, taking advantage of his honesty. He deceived him and sent him as the messenger to call Gandalf to Isengard. Yet Gandalf also explains in the council how this ended up working against Saruman, as Gandalf explained. That was the undoing of Saruman's plot, for Radagast knew no reason why he should not do as I asked. And he rode away towards Mirkwood, where he had many friends of old. And the eagles of the mountains went far and wide, and they saw many things. The gathering of the wolves and the mustering of orcs, and the nine riders going hither and thither in the lands. And they heard news of the escape of Gollum, and they sent a messenger to send these tidings to me." The messenger was, of course, Gwaihir, the eagle who rescues Gandalf from Orthanc. "I had never thought too much before about Radagast's role in this. Without Radagast's messages, Gandalf may never have been rescued. It was another example to me of how this seemingly simple and insignificant character played a key role in the ultimate fulfillment of the quest, and one that Saruman did not see coming. I also love the quote from Gandalf later on in the chapter when he says, 'Despair or folly? It is not despair, for despair is only for those who see the end beyond all doubt. We do not. It is wisdom to recognize necessity when all other courses have been weighed, though as folly it may appear to those who cling to false hope.' Well, let folly be our cloak, a veil before the eyes of the enemy, For he is very wise and weighs all things to a nicety in the scales of his malice. But the only measure that he knows is desire, desire for power, and so he judges all hearts. Into his heart the thought will not enter that any will refuse it, that having the ring we may seek to destroy it. If we seek this, we shall put him out of reckoning. Just some cool connections to the conversation. Hope you enjoy. That's a really great quote. I love that.
Yeah.
Let folly be our cloak, a veil before the eyes of the enemy. I love how he describes Sauron. He is very wise and weighs all things to a nicety in the scales of his malice. But the only measure that he knows is desire, desire for power, and so he judges all hearts. Into his heart the thought will not enter that any will refuse it, right? That having the ring we may seek to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
If we seek this, we shall put him out of reckoning. So, yeah, that's just that's a fantastic passage and fits in great with that theme of the fool's hope. Let folly be our cloak. Just that vision of Sauron, like, you know, that he's so wise and he weighs all the things to a nicety. I think he means like just to precision, right? And he's like, but he has a flawed view of the world. He views everything through power, and that's going to be his downfall, right?
Mm-hmm.
He can't imagine that somebody could resist the lure of the ring, right? At least long enough to do damage to it, right?
Yeah.
And that's ultimately his downfall.
Yeah. And that was a really good, I love that she mentioned Radagast again here, and that connection, because Saruman refers to Radagast as a fool, right?
Yeah.
But it was ultimately that fool, right, that had a part in rescuing Gandalf, and without that, I mean, who knows what would have happened?
Yeah,
to the Fellowship and their quest.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's sometimes the lowly and the simple that often underestimated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those are, you know, and those are who God delights to use, right?
Absolutely.
To confound the wise,
confound
right?
Confound the wise, right.
All right, Bethany, that was a fantastic note.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you.
Next up is from Red Hawk. Red Hawk is, of course, one of our executive producers. So.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yes.
One of our newest executive producers, in fact. Redhawk says, I never read the books until COVID hit in 2020, and even then I didn't know that there was other material from Middle-earth other than The Hobbit. I didn't realize that until I came across it by accident on Amazon looking up some Lord of the Rings swords. I got the Great Tales of Middle-earth trilogy edited by Chris Tolkien, and I read and listened to the audiobooks on Spotify, and when I finished, I had finally learned who J.R.R. Tolkien was, and so I searched and saw your podcast. I thought, why not learn more, and boom, now I have a mini library at home full of Tolkien work, so I really want to thank you again for all that you do. Sorry for the hasty and many words. No need to apologize.
Mm-mm.
For this great note. And by the way, I'm binge listening to catch up, and I started at episode 150 to recent, but I've went back to the beginning. I'm on episode 90 at the moment, gaining ground on the Uruk-hai.
Mm.
All right. Awesome.
So good.
I love
hearing about binge listeners.
I just love that here's a person who's only discovered Tolkien recently, right?
Yeah,
you know, in the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
you know. There are people out there who have yet to discover him, but will, right? And many, I'm telling y'all, many in the next year, next 2 years,
mm-hmm.
right, will discover and want to know more and go really deep. And that's why we're here, right? That's why we're here. Red Hawk, thank you. And
yes.
thank you for being an executive producer.
Indeed, thank
Greatly
you.
Greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
All right, next up is from Paul M. on November 2nd. Paul says, so excited for a second look at the Silmarillion. I have read it once and want to read it again soon, so I will wait until 2022 and hopefully go chapter by chapter with the pod.
Awesome.
Boom.
Nice.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Paul.
We're happy to have you, Paul.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And thanks for waiting to start.
Yeah. Because
I know sometimes when you want to start a book, it can just be like really, really hard to wait.
Yeah.
So I admire your patience, Paul.
Absolutely.
Thank you for it.
And last but certainly not least is from Monique S. on October 27th. And Monique said, so a friend stumbled on this and I couldn't help but think of Tolkien, Lewis, and their use of song and creation story. Somehow I thought you might find it intriguing. So this is, she links to an article on from Stanford. It's taking a little while to load here. Should have had it preloaded here. All right, here we go. From Stanford, looks like Medicine Journal. sound research. Scientific innovations harness noise and acoustics for healing. So we'll share this article in the show notes. But I just love kind of the theme here, which is that the scientific possibility of using sound for, like, you know, for healing, for holistic purposes. And, you know, I was just thinking about this, and obviously it fits with that theme of Ainu Lindele, right? Of the, you know, universe being made of music, right? That Iluvatar creates with music, and then the Valar create with music, or the Ainur create with music. And I just know from my own life, like, there's certain days when I'm out of sorts and I need to put on music to help myself focus and, like, be actually productive in work, right? I need to put on, like, good, like, maybe like ambient peaceful music to, like, kind of put myself in that space, right? And I really think there's some truth to just music and, like, kind of beautiful, like, we're meant to be surrounded by beautiful ambient music, you know?
I completely agree.
And that's why nature, I think, can be so healing a lot of times, is because you go out in nature into somewhere peaceful and you get away from all the, like, cacophony of the modern world, and you're just out in a peaceful place where you hear, like, birds and you just hear, like, kind of the wind and the sound of nature, and it's like there's that ambient noise that God gives to all of us.
Yeah, it's very refreshing.
Yeah
for mind, body, and soul.
Yeah,
and, you know, music therapy is a legit thing too.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, a lot of hospitals have that, so it kind of goes hand in hand.
I have a high school friend who I actually used to play music with in high school, who is, yeah, he does that, right? You know, I mean, you know this. I'm telling other people, like, he actually, that's like his thing. He goes and does music therapy at different hospitals and, you know, really helps people. Really.
Music
really,
is amazing.
Really good guy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody, that was amazing correspondence. Thank you so much. And we'd love to hear from each and all of you. We have many more notes that we didn't get to. So if you didn't hear it, if you sent it and haven't heard it read yet, we will hopefully get to it at some point. Yeah.
We'll get you.
Or at least we'll do our best to respond to you directly if we're not going to be able to get to it on the show. So,
yeah.
All right. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. Don't forget about those 2 months free on Patreon until the end of the year. And that's all for this week. Thanks to our amazing patrons, especially the following: Andrew T,
John R,
Ms. Anonymous,
Red Hawk,
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Shannon S,
Brian O,
Emilio P,
Zeke F,
James A,
James L,
Chris L,
Chuck F,
Azia V,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D,
Eric S,
Eric B,
Johanna T,
Mike M,
Robert H,
Paul D,
Julia,
and Weir T.
As well as those celebrating their patron anniversary in November, Matthew F,
and James.
Thanks, y'all.
Yes, guys. Thank you.
Thanks to everybody for listening. We will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, everybody.